Thank you. Okay. So, welcome to the Sunday Night There Is a Solution Newcomer and Returning Members Meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, Stephen, who is a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the direction in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After Stephen shares, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what he has shared. Please help me welcome Stephen, a compulsive overeater from Toronto, Canada. Welcome, Stephen.
Okay. Hi. Thanks, Pat. Thanks, everybody, for being here today. And welcome to any newcomers. I'll tell you just briefly a bit about myself. I live in Toronto. I'm 49 years old. I came into OA seriously, I would say, about 12 years ago. I've been abstinent for 10 years. And I'll tell you a bit more about that as I go through sharing my story. And I'm going to share my story. I'm going to tell you a little bit about my experience of compulsive overeating, but I'm not going to spend too much time there. I'm just going to share enough that people can relate. But my focus is not to talk too much about the problem. I want to talk more about the solution. So I've been abstinent for 10 years. My peak weight was about 300 pounds. I've been maintaining a 70 plus weight loss for 10 years for the first time in my life. And my history of compulsive overeating started in my teens. In my early 20s, I gained 100 pounds. And then from my early 20s until I came into Overeaters Anonymous when I was 37, I lost and gained 50 plus pounds, I think 10 or more times. And I tried everything because I lived out in the world. And in the world, I thought I was a normal person. And I just needed to apply my willpower, and eventually I will get it. And so that included dieting, restricting food. That included exercise. That included getting a personal trainer multiple times. That included hiring a nutritionist. That included quitting my job for a period of time, because if I could only minimize the amount of stress I had in my life, then I could figure this all out. And then it finally included Overeaters Anonymous, because I heard about this thing, but I didn't quite grasp it. And I used it as just a tool, as part of a package that I was going to use to figure out my problem. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Briefly about compulsive overeating, it took me to places I would never want to admit in public. Eating food out of the garbage, stealing food from my friends, going to a buffet, all-you-can-eat buffet with my friends, and then convincing them afterwards to go to a fast food restaurant, and they'd all be scratching their head. But to me, that was normal. The indignities of being obese, not being able to sit comfortably, not being comfortable in an airplane seat, not being comfortable putting on my seatbelt in an airplane, going and trying on clothes, which was a misery. My thighs rubbing together, getting sores, hygiene issues. Not liking to wash my clothes because then they got tight and I was uncomfortable. All those sorts of things, all those indignities, I could certainly relate to. And the indignities of losing weight and then being proud of it and then not seeing some people for a while and then gaining that weight back and then seeing those people and that look that they gave you. That was basically, the first 37 years of my life. So I came into Overeaters Anonymous. I didn't understand. I was a normal person. I was looking for a solution. And in Overeaters Anonymous, I learned that I wasn't normal. And that was a key piece of information for me to grasp. But it took me about 3 years within Overeaters Anonymous to fully grasp what that meant. And so in that three-year period of time, I picked and I chose what part of the program I would use. And there's a popular slogan in the program that says, take what you need and leave the rest. I think that's said so that we can maintain our humility. But the truth is, it's not true. It isn't to take what you need and leave the rest. I needed to take it all, but I didn't quite grasp what all was. And I wasn't quite desperate enough just yet. So in Overeaters Anonymous, I had three relapses of worsening severity. And I had periods of abstinence, if you want to call it that. And I got a sponsor and I fired that sponsor. And then I got another sponsor and I fired that sponsor because I wanted them to do things my way. And then I worked the steps to step seven, stopped it. And each relapse taught me about the disease a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. And in my final relapse, it lasted a month. And by the end of it, my entire apartment was covered with dishes. And I hadn't returned emails for weeks. I hadn't returned phone calls for weeks. I only went out to go to the grocery store and to go to wherever I was going to buy food. And I could barely look that person in the eye. And prior to that weight loss, I worked out with a personal trainer 4 hours a week. And I gained weight and I woke up one morning and I could barely fit into my clothes. I was not comfortable sitting in any position. And only thing I could think of that was going to make me feel better was let me go and eat. And then I finally understood that I was mentally ill and that I was doomed. And so I came back into Overeaters Anonymous and I decided to take things seriously. And I began to understand that I was ill. And I had a disease that was permanent. It's not going anywhere. It was progressive. It will only get worse. And with me, it will end with suicide. Because I find that tornado of being in that binge psychologically, emotionally, and physically intolerable. And if it goes back there again, that's where it will end for me. So it's permanent, it's progressive, and it's fatal. So I had to get to that conclusion. And when I got to that conclusion, boy, how open was I to do certain things that I didn't want to do. As the big book says, I was quicksand surrounded me in all directions. I was at the jumping off point and I needed to be there to be willing to do what was necessary. So the recovery that I have, I talk about being, I said I was abstinent for 10 years. And abstinence in OA, unfortunately, is in some circles is presented as the solution, but it's not the solution. Because abstinence for a compulsive overeater like me is a very painful, uncomfortable, temporary, and unstable state, unless quickly followed by a spiritual solution as a result of working these steps. So I've been abstinent for 10 years. Within that abstinent period of time in the early days, I got spiritually very disconnected because I didn't know exactly how to work the steps, particularly step 10 and 11 and 12. I'll speak about that later. But I didn't go back to the food, but I got close. It's only when I came upon a group of people within OA who practice recovery exactly as it's stated in the original big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that I got what I now refer to as the recovered state, which is abstinence plus a spiritual experience that's maintained so that I'm peaceful. And I've had that for several years now. So I had to understand what was the nature of the disease. The disease has two parts. The first one is my body is not like a normal human being. I had to grasp that, and it never will be. So I have a physical allergy, as it says in this book, or an abnormal physical response to certain foods, certain behaviors, and certain volumes of food. And so once I start, I can't stop, and I can't predict when it will end, how much I will consume, and how miserable I'll be. And for some things, it's an immediate abnormal response, like more. For other things, it's more gradual. Tomorrow, I'll need it again at the exact same time. The next day, I'll need it at the exact same time. The next day, I'll need more and more and more and more. And so all of those things, the ones that create the immediate and the ones that create the gradual, if you want to call it red light foods, yellow light foods, all those things have to go. I can't negotiate with them. And I tried for years and years and years. So the first part of the solution is to treat the physical allergy, entire abstinence. The second part of the disease is the mental obsession, or as it says in the big book, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind. No matter how many times I tried to stop, no matter how long I had stopped for, my mind always convinced me that it's a good idea to go back and start again. And as a result of that, I will always start again. And once I start, I can't stop. And so I'm completely powerless over food, over certain alcohol, if you want to call them alcoholic foods, behaviors, ingredients, whatever. And so I came to the conclusion I had a death sentence. And when you're given a death sentence, you don't get to choose what the solution is. The solution was entire abstinence plus a spiritual experience as a result of working the steps. Now, when I got abstinence, so for me, the things that that produce that allergy, number one is sugar and sugar substitutes or whatever, sweeteners. There's some other foods and ingredients that are in there as well, but those are the main ones. And then I have a problem with volumes. So if I exceed a certain volume, I want more and more and more and more. So I weigh and measure most things. And when I first came into Overeaters Anonymous, I thought that's ridiculous. But now that I understand the nature of the problem, I'm willing to do that. So there was certain ingredients, which I like to say S, substances, certain substances. Then there was sizes, certain volumes. And then the final one was another S, which is schedule, timing. For whatever reason, I cannot eat between a planned meal. Even if it's a little snack or a vegetable, I can't. It produces the phenomenon of craving. So I have to have planned meals, meal one, meal two, meal three, whatever that, breakfast, lunch, supper. If I eat between a meal, my mind starts going, I need more and more. Similarly, if I eat at night, my mind starts going. So once that's established, then I know what the problem is. And then I just create a food plan that excludes those things so that it's black and it's white. Black and it's white. It's not, well, I didn't eat very good today, or my food was a little sloppy today. That doesn't make any sense. When you understand the nature, first part of the problem, allergy to the body, there's no such thing as sloppy or not sloppy, black or white. Either I abstained from those things or I didn't. And then come up with a food plan. And there's lots of knowledgeable people out there that could help with the food plan. But then the food plan is not the problem. You know, an alcoholic has to have a plan of drinking liquids each day. But that's not the solution. Alcoholic can drink orange juice, can get apple juice, Coke, blah, 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 blah. But that's not the problem. Then I had to move to a spiritual solution because as soon as I put the food down, I become restless, irritable, discontent, as the book says. And I think the world and everything in it is the problem. And I'm looking for solutions. And so that abstinence will not last very long. And so the second part of the solution is the 12 steps, exactly as it's outlined in the book, as fast as possible, like my hair is on fire. What's interesting is, and this is personal opinion, this original AA big book, the original people who did the steps did them either in a few days or a few weeks. But we see in Overeaters Anonymous, people taking months, years to do the steps. And when I came to the understanding that I had a life-threatening illness, and once I put the food down, the clock starts ticking, then I approached it with an urgency that these original people were describing. So that's the first part. That's step one. Step one is getting to the point where I was absolutely hopeless. And when I look at people within the fellowship who have strong, sustained recovery, there's a common ingredient: hopelessness. Because when I wasn't hopeless, I would try to maneuver and wiggle out of doing what was necessary. When I was hopeless, I followed the instructions exactly as they're laid out in the big book. So step one, I was hopeless. Plan of eating, abstain, get through the steps as quickly as possible. So we'll move to step two. Step two, we came to believe a power greater than us, ourselves, could restore us to sanity. I grew up in a liberal Christian tradition, but I'm not sure I really believed in God. And I certainly didn't believe that God could help me, that God was interested. I didn't see much evidence of God in daily life. And in truth, if God was present, I thought God was kind of a jackass, because there was lots of bad stuff happening and God wasn't doing anything, in my opinion. However, these people were telling me you need a spiritual experience in order to recover. And when backed into a corner, my mind opens up. And so all I had to do was be willing to believe, to open my mind to the possibility, and then just take actions to see if that possibility exists. Step two is not asking me to believe in God. Because to be honest, the rational person would not believe in a higher power at that point. Higher power hasn't done anything. Step two is only saying, open your mind to the possibility and take the next steps in that direction, and you may be surprised what happens. So at that point, I only had to be willing to believe in a higher power that had two features. Number one, was more powerful than this disease. And number two, liked me. Those were the only two features. I could get rid of absolutely all other theology, blah, blah, blah. There's a power out there that wants to help me, and that power likes me, and it's powerful. Step three, we made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. Initially, I spent a lot of time thinking in this step, reading windy books, searching out religious texts, and that didn't help me at all. Step three is just a decision. Step one, two, and three are not action steps. They're only decisions. Step one, I'm hopeless. Step two, maybe this will help. Step three, I'm going to do what it takes to find that help. The only decision I'm making in step three is to proceed to step four. Turning my will and my life over to a power greater than myself is taking steps 4 through 12. So people who say to me they're working on step three, that doesn't make sense. There's no such thing as working on step three. If I'm hopeless, if I've opened my mind to the possibility that there may be help, then I'm just making a decision. Step four, I made a fearless and searching inventory, moral inventory of myself. I had a lot of trouble with this. I didn't want to do it, but it was one of the most dramatic exercises in my life. I did it in a very simple way, as it's outlined in the big book. My tendency would be to create a big story of my life, write 100 pages about it. That wouldn't be helpful. The big book helped me to see the areas of my life where I needed to grow, and that I would never have seen on my own. By looking at my resentments, looking at my fears, and looking at my sexual or relationship history or any harms I'd done to people. And when I did that, I could see how self-centered I was. I couldn't see that before. And as I went through this process, I started to see that self-centeredness was the thing that blocked me from this higher power. And then in step five, I shared it with another person. And for the first time in my life, I was completely honest with another person. And simply by doing that, my spiritual experience started to happen. I started to feel a sense of peace. Step six and seven. Step six is, what is step six? Pat. Anyway, step six and seven are about character defects. First of all, acknowledging them. And second of all, being willing to let go of them. And this is not an immediate thing. This is a lifetime thing. But I had to be able to look at these character defects, this selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking and fear, self-reliance, and be open to the idea that God may help, or higher power, however I choose to conceive of that, may help me with this. Step eight and nine, I became willing to make amends to people I had harmed. That was a hard one for me. You know, there were people I would see on the street and I would want to go the other way. but now I was on a life I had a life-threatening problem. And unless I did these things, I couldn't get recovery. And so I made amends to people with the guidance of a fellow who was guiding me through that process, who helped me to do it in a simple way, in a humble way, and not in a self-centered way that's looking to control an outcome or to get somebody to like me. Because if I did it on my own, that's the problem I would have had. And through that process, I was able to get more peace and more serenity, and relationships that had been damaged gradually healed. So that's step nine. So that's cleaning up the wreckage of my past, as the book tells me. And in step nine, some promises started to happen. Suddenly the food wasn't on my mind as much, and I didn't have to work as hard, to maintain this abstinence. Suddenly I wasn't worried about tomorrow. I wasn't ruminating about the past. And I had never experienced that before. And it was the beginning of a spiritual experience. I didn't see a bright light. I didn't see God. I didn't hear God. But certain things started to happen to me.
10 more minutes.
Okay. And then I had to, then step 10 and 11 and 12 are about maintaining that experience and growing. My experience has been that a spiritual experience does not stay static. It either recedes, and when it recedes, I go back to the food, or it grows and it gets stronger and stronger and stronger. So that meant work on my part. So a 10-step process that allows me to continually take inventory. So when I'm getting emotionally disturbed, I have a mechanism to deal with that. That is a very brief step 4 through 9, but I can do as many times a day as I need to, and keep myself connected to this higher power. And then step 11, which is in many ways what it's all about, suddenly having access to this higher power, this air traffic controller who sees all the planes and knows how they're landing so they don't crash, this GPS system, however you want to call it, that knows a better path for me than I know myself, and that I try to connect through morning prayer, through praying when I'm getting having trouble during the day, or before I go to bed at night. And then finally, step 12. Step 12 says, having had a spiritual experience, that's the first part. So before I carry the message, I have to have something to carry. And it has to be more than my words. It has to be my demeanor. Having had a spiritual experience as the result of these steps, not as a result of calling my sponsor every day and asking them advice on every piece of information in my life. No, as a result of working these steps and accessing this higher power, we try to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. And how do I practice these principles in all our affairs? I have to be directed by a higher power. So my relationships have to be directed by a higher power, who wants the best for me, but also wants the best for other people. So it's not self-centered. So I'm not causing more damage. My career, my higher power knows me best, knows what's the best situation for me. My recovery. So I have to carry this into all other aspects of my life. And when I do that, I draw closer to this higher power. I'm able to maintain my recovery. And then what happens is I'm no longer running away from food. Food is not actually an issue. I don't spend much time thinking about it anymore. I'm trying to get closer to this thing that gives me peace, so that my life is not contingent on the things that I have or what's going on in the rest of the world. I don't go up and down, up and down, up and down. I have some peace. And it's an amazing thing. I came in here to lose weight and to stop eating compulsively, and I've got something completely different that's taking care of that problem, but is addressing all the other aspects of my life that had I not had the compulsive overeating problem, I would be addressing right now with self, trying to maneuver myself in the world to suit my purposes and probably causing myself misery and other people misery. So I've gotten more out of this than I expected. And I'm very grateful for that. I want to say one final thing about sponsoring people. The book is very clear. The book actually never mentions the word sponsoring. So as a sponsor, I'm a guide. I don't have any special knowledge except for my own experience and the instructions in the Big Book. And I try not to be creative with the instructions because I may take away from them. So I try to follow them exactly as they are in this book. And I guide people to their higher power. And then their higher power solves their problems. So I don't want a person to get, the whole purpose of this is not to find a relationship with me. You may like me. We may become friends, but this isn't a friendship. I'm here to guide you through this so you can access your higher power. And so you can turn to your higher power to solve the food problem, but also to solve all the other problems in your life. I don't have the answer. And when I do that, amazing things happen. And my life has been transformed. And so that's really all I have to say. And I'm grateful to be here. Happy to take questions.